Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today, we're going to be talking with Epson's Joshua Stanfill about online and mobile ordering software. How's demand shifted because of the COVID pandemic? What makes a good software? What's the next normal look like? As always, we'll tackle our recurring questions, value to the VAR, what's tech connecting with us. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I mentioned, we are talking today with Josh Stanfill. He is the ISV Business Development Manager for Epson. Josh, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks. So my name is Josh Stanfill. I've been with Epson for a couple of years. Background is mainly in retail, specialty retail, omnichannel, you know, more of the complex kind of connecting all the components of it together. Since I've been with Epson, I've actually had a lot of experience in the restaurant space. I manage mainly more on the west side of or the western regions of North America, and a lot of restaurant ISVs over there. So learning a lot about restaurants and online ordering and some of the difficulties that they have in running a business.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, that's an interesting perspective that you're bringing to it here, Josh. I mean, the omnichannel that was in your background, I mean, isn't it amazing what has happened over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years as it relates to omnichannel? And I know it's obviously topical what we're going to talk about today, online and mobile, but omnichannel is just one of those things. It's just fascinating. I came out of digital signage world. So, you know, I was tapped into some of that omnichannel way back in the day when they didn't even call digital signage digital signage. They called it narrowcasting. And, you know, they were really having a hard time coming up with the right word. But anyway, omnichannel is cool. And it's here and it's not going anywhere, right?
No.
I mean, yeah, it might, especially in our world today.
Yeah.
How do we keep people engaged across the board?
I think that's going to be exactly the point that we get to today, is that this is not going anywhere and everybody needs to figure out how to adapt.
Yep.
So, well, that's a good kind of launching point for us to talk about what's happening and where we are. Josh, you mentioned you're obviously very immersed with retailers and restaurants out in the West and what they've been dealing with. So I do want to start off talking a little bit about COVID-19. I'll be honest, I kind of get sick of talking about it sometimes, but we have to because it has affected our industry in a lot of different ways. Yeah. And a lot of what's going to happen moving forward has to do with how we've reacted, you know, to what we've already experienced, what's going to happen next, what may happen further down the road. Mm-hmm. So obviously there had to have been a huge demand shift for all things online and mobile ordering.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of restaurants and retailers that were not equipped or ready to not have foot traffic in their stores, to literally not even be able to open their doors and let people come in and browse and shop anymore. So, Josh, I want to start with you to kind of tell me about what happened in your world. Like, what kind of questions did you get from retailers and restaurants at the onset? What were you hearing about? What was concerning them? And kind of what was your game plan at the beginning of all of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we support a lot of the industry folks from the software side and from, you know, the VAR and integrator side that are helping deploy a lot of these solutions. And a lot of the things that we saw were, how do we accommodate what is needed for COVID-19 and for businesses to actually operate? And so, you know, lots of kind of interesting uses for printers and, you know, things like kind of in my bubble with Epson. For us, it was interesting to see, you know, some software companies kind of parked things for a little bit, like on the growth world, but really decided, hey, let's go back and look at our software and let's use this opportunity as a time to sharpen our swords. We've just been dealing with a lot of companies that are trying to grow throughout this. We had some companies that kind of shifted different directions on this, more focused on online ordering type platforms. Everything from how do you label a bag for online ordering now that people in the restaurant world are doing, you know, it's like 30 or 40% of people are doing like one order a week or something, you know, through online ordering. How do you accommodate labels? How do you make people feel secure in that world? How do you assist with all the efficiencies that are required to kind of take on this new thing that not a lot of restaurants had adopted prior. So there's a lot of new for everyone, you know, in this. The moment they figured out, hey, we can, in the restaurant world, we can do some online ordering. In the retail world, we can do curbside pickup. How do we make that all happen now? You know, there's a lot of things, you know, a lot of moving parts with that in order for it to work. Can it support loyalty, gift cards? You know, there's a lot of different things to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you think, what are some of the big takeaways that you saw? Let's focus in on the software companies here, just real quick. Those that have successfully helped their end users, their merchants and things of that nature. What are some of the things that you've seen? This is a successful trait. These are companies that are helping out. Anything that you can glean over the last 3-4 months that you've seen that have really enabled some of those companies?
Well, I think a lot of restaurants and retailers have always looked at online ordering and how are we supporting this? And from the software company's perspective, they've always had on their product roadmaps or even offered online ordering, but maybe it wasn't, you know, used by their base as much as they expected. So from what we've seen, a lot of software companies are really just making building out their online ordering platforms, offering, you know, many of them during this period offered them for free. Try it. You know, it's one of those where if you're on it for 60 days and you could, or 90 days, and you could see that you can go from zero revenue in, you know, maybe a month ago in a lot of areas to, you know, having some type of revenue and bringing some employees back on. That's a lot of what we had seen. And if the restaurant was already operating prior to that, online ordering can add like 30% of revenue, like right from the get-go. Obviously, there's some other components of that might eat into that 30%, but they're doing the marketing for you. You know, they're aggregating everything. There's lots of benefits by supporting it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, what I wrote down is kind of the accelerated roadmap. I totally understand that a lot of these software companies, they had stuff on the whiteboard, you know, hey, we're going to get to this. It might be 2021, 2022, these features and functionality, whoop, timeline crunched, need that now rather than later. Josh, you know, in accordance with that, though, you know, I always think about the reseller just because I was a reseller once. And, you know, I can just imagine that what was a traditional POS reseller that maybe was playing in the retail space, really comfortable with their world, if you will. What have you seen in some of your partners who have successfully pivoted a little bit toward enabling this online? What are some things they have to do? Do they have to educate themselves more on the workflow of what's happening in retail and understanding that world even more holistically than they did in the past, or anything you can glean there?
Well, I think, you know, if you're focusing on the customer first in any one of these scenarios, whether you're a VAR, software company, consultant, any of that, if you focus on the experiences that customers are having, then likely everything is very positive with what's happening right now. If you're, I mean, what is the goal? The goal in a lot of these is to increase revenue, increase loyalty, and make things more efficient for everyone across the board. So if I was a VAR in this situation, looking at this from afar, what are all the components that are enabling online ordering to take place in retail and restaurant? And what parts of those can I be a part of? You know, not a lot of the online ordering platforms, I say more specifically towards restaurant in this case, really offer the ability for resellers to get involved with it. But the technology all around it is. You know, whether it's the networking component, whether it's, you know, is there a way for their loyalty program to work? Are there integrations that could be done between the online ordering platforms and the point of sale? You know, things with like printers, are they able to get notified in the store? And in restaurants specifically, which has really been, I think, the area that there's been a lot of changes that has happened since COVID-19 kicked off. How is the efficiency impacted inside of the kitchen? Are you offering a kitchen display system? Are you a guru in that? Because everything is going digital. It doesn't matter, even kitchen tickets. You know, we've even gotten into, you know, KDS systems, digitizing kitchen tickets and watching and being able to monitor that workflow from an employee's perspective, you know, what employees are more efficient in certain areas, the timelines of when you get rushes, whether it's online, in-store, food purchasing, there's so many things that come into it. When you turn on online ordering and you can grow 30% overnight, you could sign up with a lot of, you know, there's platforms where they're like an aggregator, like a, say, you know, I'll throw one out like Ordermark. They aggregate many different online ordering platforms into it. So you only have one company that you're working with, but you're listed everywhere. And if there's one thing that restaurants typically struggle with, and even retailers for the most part, is marketing their business. Getting people in the doors a lot of the times is a struggle. And when you have this you know, army of online ordering platforms out there paying for people to click on, you know, your brand, putting you at the top, offering all of these, it's really helping now that restaurants are starting to open, being able to walk into these restaurants now that maybe you didn't even know existed until you got on DoorDash or Grubhub or Uber Eats or Chowly or ChowNow or whoever it may be. And now you've tried their food, it arrived at home much better than it would have probably a year ago, because people care about the containers and everything now. And so now you just found maybe a new local restaurant. And what they're finding now is that the online ordering part of this is instigating a lot of in-store revenue now as well.
Yeah. That is actually a perfect segue into the next question I was going to ask, which is about the software partners themselves and the various softwares that are out there. When the pandemic kind of, you know, came into play, one of my other jobs at Blue Star is content marketing. So I work with a lot of software partners that are partnering up with our vendors and going out and trying to promote solutions. And we found a lot of them approaching us and saying, hey, we want to figure out how to position ourselves and promote our solution around something related to COVID-19. And it was one of those things where, like, I got the impulse. I understood the desire to, you know, to jump on what's happening and make a move. And you can listen to one of our early podcasts where we talked about, you know, how you should be digitally marketing during a crisis like this. But there was many times where we had to say, all right, does it make sense to be promoting yourself as a some sort of solution? Or are you just simply saying, like, well, we've got something that could sort of help out with this, but we're not, you know, we're not really good at this. It's not our thing, but we can sort of do it. So we want to promote it. So obviously, you know, I think it's important to try to find software companies to work with that are legitimately able to handle the task at hand. So I'm curious from your perspective, you know, if someone came to you and said, hey, I'm looking for, like, what do I need to be looking for in a software in order to implement online mobile ordering, BOPIS, you know, back of the house, new, you know, all this new stuff that I'm suddenly having to take on, what should I be looking for? What kind of general things would you say, like, hey, here's things that are must-haves in any kind of software to get you where you need to be?
Sure. Well, I think number one, you want to look at, do you want this to be an integrated platform, and is it capable with the point of sale that you have today? If it can be integrated, that resolves a lot of issues and a lot of extra work that has to happen, because if it's not integrated, they're basically running completely paralleled efforts. The order comes through, doesn't talk to the kitchen, revenue is not in your reporting, degradation of, like, inventory levels, if you're actually inputting inventory, it's not affecting that either. And so that would probably be the very first thing that I would look at. Secondly, I'd probably look at whether they're an aggregator, whether they have multiple platforms that are supported on this. If you want to really get strong reach right off the get-go doing it, that's not a bad option as well. I think some offer delivery services that are separate that you could, if you just had an online ordering, built into your e-commerce site, like a lot of companies offer as well. If you had it built into your site, maybe built into a web app or, you know, something like that, or a branded app of yourself, you could use some of these platforms just as your drivers. And so it really depends on what you're looking to do. You know, now we're even getting into, like, kitchens that you don't even walk into, right? Like cloud kitchens and phantom kitchens, and online ordering is 100% their play there, because they're non-existent without online ordering. And so there's a whole new entity of restaurants starting up that don't even need a retail space. Or look at some of the big chains. Some of the big chains can't even accommodate the volume that they have in their restaurants for online ordering with sit-in, takeout, you know, everything that they've got, they have to set up kitchens elsewhere just to support online ordering.
That's interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, the company on Shark Tank recently, there was something interesting where he didn't get any funds, unfortunately. But he basically brought to the table, hey, I have four different restaurant entities right here that I could just drop into a cloud kitchen. Now I have four restaurants that could be online operating, not independently, but from the same management and leadership, but four totally separate entities with very little risk. Because the risk in a lot of restaurants is, you know, signing the lease, buying all the equipment, all the employees that you're managing, you know, all of that. And so the cloud kitchen part of this is kind of interesting too.
You know, the aggregate piece that you mentioned is something I hadn't really thought about before, but it makes a lot of sense. The idea that, you know, there's a lot of different platforms that are available out there. You know, we've, and I think a lot of us have probably encountered quite a few during this particular pandemic and this situation. You know, maybe one day you're ordering off of DoorDash, the next day it's Uber Eats. You know, you might be trying a lot of different things. But I also feel like we're also starting to get very savvy to those different types of ordering services that are out there. And there's been a lot there's been a lot of media and discussion about, you know, how much money they're charging you in fees, how much money they're actually paying their employees. So I think people are going to start getting a little bit more discriminate about which of these platforms they're ordering from now that they know that there are choices out there. So I can see that being very beneficial to a restaurant to be able to say, like, look, we're available on all of these various platforms. So you can pick the one that you're comfortable in buying from and are comfortable in their particular business practices, and you'll still get food from us and not have to just pick one. Because I feel like there were a lot of restaurants that when I decided to go out and like, hey, I want to get something from this restaurant, there was one option that I had of who to get it from. And it may not have been someone that I was particularly excited about, you know, maybe someone that charged way too much for delivery fees and fees on fees on fees. So that's, it's just, that's interesting. I just really had not thought about the idea that you could have, you know, easily dispersed among a lot of different platforms. So it's pretty cool.
And so one other thing on what you were saying from a feature perspective, the other thing to look at is, do these platforms offer like catering, group orders? There's lots. Can you schedule orders? Some of these are really important for restaurants, you know, and how they kind of see the restaurant growing. And so, you know, that's definitely something to look at as well.
Yeah, definitely. So let's kind of start thinking ahead here. And well, I guess one other thing I kind of want to talk about too is, do you feel like there's going to be some concern with these restaurants as they start, you know, getting back to quote normal, I suppose, you know, the new normal, next normal, whatever we're thinking about. But I know also that there may be some issues with a divide amongst people that can or cannot use these services. Yeah, there was another podcast we did where we talked about, you know, services for retail coming out, that there may be a generational divide, you know, older customers that may not be as savvy with technology and may not be as comfortable with, you know, jumping onto an app or onto a website. There could be economic divides. Again, I mentioned those fees. You know, it's one thing to be able to take your family to McDonald's and, you know, maybe, you know, feed your entire family for under $20. But if suddenly you've got all kinds of delivery fees and additional fees for online ordering stacked on top of that, that price could potentially change. And then there's also maybe just access. You know, there could be areas of the country where someone might not have access. So do you feel like that's something that these software developers are addressing or should be addressing to make sure that no one gets left out of this picture as we go along, especially if, let's say, we have to do this again at some point?
It's funny. I was listening to a comedy last night, and one of the things that he had said on it was, you know, for the people that have a voicemail that has your that says, or when you leave a voicemail and you leave your phone number and your full name, and most of the time you know the person, they already know your number. Like we're beyond that today, or at least we should be. Like you know that I know that you know my number. You know.
Yeah,
that's like when I get a voicemail saying, "Hi, John, it's Mom." Like, yeah, I know your name popped up, and I mean, I do recognize you. We've been pretty familiar for a while. Yeah.
Call me. Yeah. So I kind of think online ordering is a little bit like that too, where it definitely has been supercharged in like the I don't even want to say the term, but the millennial crowd. If we can, I don't even know where that falls. I'm very close to that, by the way. So it depends on the study you read, but. They've fully adopted it, ordering once or twice a week. A lot of times it's super convenient for them. Like if you're inner city living, you know, it's really not that much more expensive depending on where you're at. Even like families, I read something about families recently. Sometimes it's just easier to not take your family out. I have two kids, you know, and I order in every once in a while.
I'm with you there, Josh. Yeah, we order in. Like I said, one of the comments, we've done Uber Eats, I mean, or well, DoorDash at least once a week now. We never did that before, but it's just, it's pretty darn convenient.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, where else can you have, you know, dessert delivered at 9:30 at night? You know, how do you get that? You know, so as far as like the age thing, I think that it's just working its way up to where, depending on how technology or technologically savvy you are, comfortable you are, I would imagine that most people have probably tried it. I think that it's something like 70% right now have at least ordered something online or, you know, or more. And so it's going to grow. I think it's going to be, we've had what, 300% growth, I think, with online ordering through restaurants, something ridiculous like that. Since February, I think the online ordering from a restaurant's perspective, restaurants that support it are up like 150%. You know, so that shows that there's a pretty big gap of restaurants that did not support online ordering. I still have some in town that don't support, a really nice restaurant doesn't support Open Table, doesn't support online ordering. The experience, even though the food is great and the restaurant's cool, and I don't know, maybe it's a little too hip, maybe, but they don't want to support some of this. And it actually makes for a poor experience when I go in there and I know that I have to wait for a table, you know, because this is all a part of, you know, this. Pickup, they've refined a little bit, but I don't know. Are you ordering, you know, throughout the week ever, and, you know, trying new restaurants and finding it to be kind of fun?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes to all that. Yeah.
It is fun. Yeah, yes. It's different. Exactly. Well, it's nice to be able to get food, like, so. Yeah, there's been food I feel like I'm able to get now that I never, either places I'd never ordered from before or places I never would have dreamed of ordering and having at home. And I don't feel like I'm hurting for the quality. Like there's no damage to the quality of the food. It's, I guess unless you just really love that restaurant experience, you're not getting too much different out of it. You know, if all you cared about was the food itself, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. But what's interesting about this part of the commentary is that, you know, if we think downstream a little bit and kind of connecting to the first thing we were talking about, Josh, which was omnichannel and in kind of the overall customer experience, I'm going to weave those two together here. That once I feel like, you know, restaurants are starting to embrace the online order. Yeah, there's going to be additional features, functionality. I love where you're going with back of house for resellers to really, you know, expand their businesses to understand what's happening in the back of house and how they can get into that. But another area is going to be that customer experience, because I often feel like one of the fails, if you will, of online ordering or even doing DoorDash is, okay, I'm in DoorDash's world, right? Their UI, their world. So everything looks like DoorDash. And then the experience is all the way through to the person who's delivering my food. And so whether or not that reflects on the restaurant itself, I have a bad experience with the driver or the packaging, you know, stuff was all over the place. And I feel like that's kind of next, right? A lot of these restaurants are going to start looking and taking an eye on the total experience, right, even when it's delivered.
I had the opposite of that happen. I had someone bring me their food. The food, I think it was from Chipotle. And apparently the lines at Chipotle were ridiculously long because they were offering some kind of like free delivery or percentage off or whatever if you ordered online. So the guy gets there and he's like, please don't give me a bad rating because I had to wait in line for like 45 minutes at Chipotle. It was their problem because they put this promo out there.
Fair enough.
Not me. Yeah. And, you know, and he's right, because otherwise I had no reason to know. Like, for all I knew, he would just took forever to get there and took forever to get to me. You know, like, it was all part of the single experience to me. But in reality, it was two different companies that had to perform in that moment. And one was kind of failing and the other was doing just fine. And I was kind of prepared to punish the entire, you know, situation, like, it's all your fault, you know? So that's a good point. I think they are going to have to start being a little selective and think about who we want to work with.
Yeah.
And that may actually go for the software vendors as well and providers. They may have to choose who they want to actually partner with.
Absolutely. And if I could shift gears just a little bit on you, Josh, because I think that I would love to hear kind of your answer on Epson and how you guys approach ISVs. And let me give you a little bit of context, because John and I live in a world, obviously we have our Tech Connect program. As a distributor, we are approached daily by, to me, the word that I use is the ISV community right now, software community, is a little bit like the Wild West. And then you've got a lot of developers out there. Everybody thinks they're a little bit better than the next person, that their features are a little bit better and stuff like that. So we, you know, part of the challenge that we have is sifting through that, trying to figure out who the right partners are that we're going to put our resources behind. And I would imagine that a company like Epson, my gosh, you guys are so ingrained into the POS world. Can you talk, and I'm not looking for any secrets here, but how do you guys, what is your approach towards software development companies or, you know, since that's kind of your world, how do you live that?
Sure. Yeah, that's exactly my world. Lots of online ordering platforms and restaurant, you know, point of sale and retail point of sale. I think our approach is we're very open-minded about who comes to us. And a lot of the times, you know, we may find someone at a show or they may come to us organically somehow. We do have almost an 80% market share of restaurants right now, top to bottom. And so that helps a little bit because they know the brand. But, you know, we really look at each company. We've had some companies that have grown very quickly in our partner program. We try to prime the pump a little bit. You know, we do have some funds to kind of help companies grow. We try to really connect other companies. You know, for example, a big online ordering platform, we connected immediately to RSPA when COVID-19 kicked off. Tried to make introductions there because they were really looking to do more humanitarian type efforts during this period. And that aligns a lot with us. We understand capitalizing on it, but the truth is we wanted people that were really looking to do good things. And so we build a lot of closer relationships with the software companies. There's a lot of face-to-face. We do, you know, like private events, and we really want to know who they are, and we want to know their leadership team, and we want to be able to get behind them and do everything that we can to help them grow. Because it's really a long-term play, no matter how you look at it. And I think that's probably the same for you guys as well.
Yeah, I think we align very well there. You know, that's exactly the tactic that we deploy when we're trying to come up with the right partnerships, because our customers demand that. I mean, we feel obligated that if our customer is going to come to us with that type of request, we're going to lean on great partners like Epson and the ecosystem that they have built and rely on that so that we can all, because we're all in this fight together, mm-hmm. and we're trying to make the most efficient use of everybody's time in developing these solutions. But man, like I said, I can just imagine that you guys are probably, what's the statistics? There's 100,000 software development companies out there in 2017. There's going to be over 1 million of them by 2027. So it's like, it's just this constant yeah. world of developers out there. So sometimes I'm glad I don't have your job, Josh, because your door is probably knocking all the time. Hey, I got a great idea.
Yeah. Everybody's got the next big thing.
Right.
Look at like a big one right now, and we're all going to experience this definitely in restaurant, or QR codes on tables. So that's a huge one. And we've had companies come to us, hey, we want to put a QR code for a payment thing. We want to be able to print a receipt. You know, how do we do that part of it? How does it tie to the point of sale? So there's a lot of really interesting things that are going to come from this. And I wouldn't say that we're as advanced as we would like to think we are here in America.
True.
Definitely.
We've talked about that many times, especially when it comes to payments.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Payments is number one. We're so far behind. And I think maybe we have a responsibility for people to be doing Apple Pay and Google Pay and Samsung Pay, teaching people that an NFC payment is way faster, more encrypted, and you don't have to touch anything.
There you go. Even better.
I'm a big advocate for that. I've spoken about it many times. Yeah. I'm all for being able to go eat somewhere or shop somewhere and never have to speak to a person, just get everything. I mean, I guess somebody has to bring me my food and he doesn't pop up out of the, you know, the table yet, but we'll get there.
I think there's a category for shoppers like you.
Is it something you're allowed to say on a podcast? we don't typically have this market explicit, but if we have to, you know.
Right.
Well, I think the last thing I kind of want to mention, we don't really have to get too far into this because I feel like we've dealt a lot with like what's going to happen next and what the expectations are in the future. But, you know, we've talked a lot about mostly restaurants, but you know, retailers obviously in general, any kind of retail have been hurting a lot from this. And you know, at least for restaurants, if they could figure out a way to stay open and do business, they could. And for a lot of retailers, that just was not a thing. Like they're, you know, unless they really could shift their model and get into really deep into stuff like buy online, pick up in store, curbside delivery, e-commerce, they may have had to shut down entirely and not go anywhere. Yeah. But I think there's also, you know, obviously as things start reopening, there may be this perception among some of the resellers we work with, some of the software companies, some of the end users that, hey, we ride this out. If we can make it through this and stay liquid, we come out the other side and get back to business as normal. And I think we've established plenty of times that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And a couple of statistics I found that were interesting. There was a study from Morning Consult. This was in early April that said that 24% of customers said that they would not feel comfortable shopping in a mall for more than 6 months. And this was April. 16% said they would feel comfortable sometime within the next 3 months. So those are, you know, 24%. That's a quarter of people basically saying, you know, but through most of this year, I'm still not going to feel comfortable going somewhere and actually shopping in person. Mm-hmm. And a decent amount of people, you know, a smaller amount of people saying like, yeah, I might be able to do that sometime in the next few months or so. I don't see that changing. And I feel like even, you know, until we've got to the point where we can safely and comfortably say like, hey, we've got treatment, we've got testing, we've got vaccine, whatever it is that's going to make people feel comfortable about this situation, I don't see any reason why people are going to change that behavior and suddenly decide like, yeah, sure, I can't wait to go racing out into a store packed with people and touching all the things that everyone else has touched and standing in line with someone coughing in my ear. No one wants to do that again at this point. So that's my cautionary tale of if you think that you ride this out and get back to business as usual at some point, I don't know there is any such thing anymore, because I think people are, even once all those things are in place, I think people are going to be hyper aware of what we went through. And regardless of what the situation is, you hear someone coughing, you're immediately going to go, well, you know, like you're going to cringe a little bit. What was that? That's my two cents on it, at least.
So. Christmas shopping might look a little different in 2020. Oh, yeah.
That's actually going to be very interesting because
it will be.
I mean, obviously, again, we have no idea where things are going to be
right. In
just a few months from now. Yeah. The holiday season could be a make or break for a lot of businesses this year, I think. It's kind of scary to think about.
Yeah. But it's back to like what Josh was saying that, you know, I think that there's opportunities there, right? Mm-hmm. And for those retail establishments that are of the mindset that they want to be in it for the long haul, you know, if it's a reseller partner, they have to be able to understand the solution, a mix that will enable them into BOPIS or online ordering as well. Are you seeing some of those trends, Josh, where, you know, you know, obviously the software companies are there and helping to enable that. But let's talk about the smaller, medium size retail establishments. Are they coming online with online, or what are you seeing there with that particular community? Because the targets of the world, they get an unfair advantage. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's the smaller to medium sized companies. I'm sorry, you were saying?
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is there's a handful of really good software companies here, you know, local to North America that have really good online ordering platforms for retailers. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest part, and I can tell you that I don't order a lot of clothes online, but during this period, I've ordered from two different companies, probably a, you know, picture perfect scenario. Both found me on Instagram somehow. I clicked on it. Said the softest t-shirt in the world, ordered it, wrong size. Well, one company made me pay the shipping.
No.
And I thought that does not seem like the experience that you want to give to a first-time customer. The other company, I did order the right size, and it did feel like butter, like they said. the experience is actually pretty positive. So I think it's really tough when you're ordering from companies you haven't ordered from before. That's the challenge, like in the experience side. You know, you have to get into the psyche of the buyer and make them feel very comfortable in your return policy, exchange policy, whatever it might be. The other part, if you're not supporting gift cards or loyalty, but yet I can go into your store and you support gift cards and loyalty, you know, that's a little disheartening. It might make me more hesitant of buying online then. How quickly does it arrive? I can order food right now and it's going to be here in 20 minutes. From almost any place in town. If I order a shirt or some pants or a belt buckle or shoes, when are they arriving? I can basically get everything from Amazon or online ordering in restaurant quicker than I can in retail. And that gap has to be bridged.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah.
Excellent point. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something also I found out in my reading. It's something like, it was 88% of online shoppers were willing to pay for same day or faster delivery services, which you think sounds like a lot, but it does make sense because, again, we're used to having that kind of, you know, in hand right now type of experience. And again, I think this whole situation with restaurants has been a big part of that. Like, hey, I can order my favorite meal. Not only do I no longer have to go wait in line for an hour to get a table or wait for a table, wait to get served, wait to pay my check and then leave. I can do all of that in half the time that I could before, but why can't I do that with everything?
So. And clothing being one of them. That's a really good point, Josh. I never really thought about that, but my expectation, if I needed a new shirt, it's going to be a couple days.
Right.
You know,
you can't order a shirt to wear
maybe tomorrow, right, through Amazon. And but you know, and I've tried to do, but that's a really excellent point. And I think that it all speaks to the societal changes that we're going through. And a lot of it's being driven by the younger generation, millennial and whatnot, and the desire. It was already there before. It's just now really getting amped up and quickly moving forward. But I can tell you this, that a lot of because I have a kid that's in the high school age, and a lot of those kids are now driving for Uber and Uber Eats and all those good things. So whereas they maybe at one time, at least I got that restaurant job in the summer and stuff like that. They're all delivering stuff.
Yep.
So, but retail is an excellent point, Josh. Retail really has to bridge that gap.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this has been a great conversation. We do want to shift over to our recurring segments, though. In the meantime, if anyone listening has some questions, comments, insight yourself on online and mobile ordering, feel free to reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod, or you can email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. So we want to wrap up with our two recurring segments. The first is the value to the VAR. This is where we want to kind of wrap up the conversation we've had and talk to our VARs in particular about what they should be doing or could be doing based on what we've been talking about. So, Josh, I kind of want to ask you to actually give me some specifics and tell me what are some retail and restaurant friendly, or actually more VAR friendly, software companies that you know that are out there that maybe you want to give a shout out to, that you feel like that if VARs will reach out to them to help them accelerate this movement and help them help their end users, that you would definitely recommend that they talk to you right now.
Sure. Well, I have to be very careful with who I name. Many of these
understandable
our partners, and I don't want to not name any, but we work with a lot of the bigger companies in this. And unfortunately, in the VAR world, in the restaurant space, online ordering, there is going to be a challenge to find revenue directly from online ordering today. If the revenue that's really in that is available, if you're working with solutions that have the ability to embed onto websites and to do that type of work on the e-commerce part of it. And definitely the same thing for retail, bridging the gap between physical and, digital. I'd go through and look at all of them and find out what the differences are between the platforms. You know, if you're consulting, if you're a VAR or an integrator in any of this, you should know a lot of the major platforms, not only here, but outside of the U.S., because some of the ones outside of the U.S., like Grubhub was just purchased from a company outside of the U.S. Will that company make it here? Maybe. So there's a lot of interesting things that are happening in online ordering outside of the U.S. to look at as well. I think that from a revenue standpoint, from a VAR and just a consultative type approach for them, know the platforms, check them out. Definitely understand the aggregators, the ones that have integrations, the ones that do not. What point of sales have direct integrations to these platforms are a big help for your customers as well, the merchants. Long-term, what are they trying to do as a restaurant? And if it's a newer restaurant or retailer being set up, do they have the capacity to accommodate what's needed? Can a driver go in and pick up in an area that's not in the same area that I'm going in as maybe a buying customer? And so there's lots of things to think about that I think that is the VAR's responsibility and people that are in that, in that world to help the restaurants and retailers understand.
Yeah, and if I could kind of parlay on that a little bit, what I think part of what we discussed today here and the value to the VAR, and if I could frame it out a different way, because I totally understand that sometimes resellers are really anxious about getting out of their comfort zone. Now more than ever, one thing a pandemic will teach you is that you have to sometimes get out of your comfort shell. because everything around you is changing. So don't fear learning more about back of house, about the workflows, about how you can help your customers become more efficient back of house by understanding the workflow and then understanding who the partners are, the software companies out there that, that might be able to help you. Great companies like Epson have ecosystems that you can lean on. I know I preach this a lot. We used to do it, though, when I was a reseller, is lean on manufacturing resources from the reefs because they're there. They're in the same game. Everybody's pulling on the same side of the rope. So people like Josh can really help you out and become more efficient in that regard so that you can, again, stay relevant to the holistic solution that you're pitching.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say something similar in that and obviously to reach out to folks like Josh at Epson, reach out to your vendor partners. You know, if you trust them to provide the hardware that's needed for these particular solutions, then there's a pretty good chance they know who to talk to on the software side of things as well. So don't hesitate to reach out, ask them questions, find someone like a Josh to talk to and say, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish in this particular restaurant or retailer. I know you've got the hardware that I need to accomplish this, but can you help me, you know, direct me in a good direction for some software also? Doesn't hurt to ask.
Nope, doesn't hurt to ask. That's right.
All right. Well, our last segment is the fun part of the show, What's Tech Connecting With You? This is where we talk about one or two technologies that are exciting, impacting our lives, something fun we're playing, watching, using, reading about. Just, you know, what's exciting us right now? What's connecting with us? So Josh, I'll let you start. What is tech connecting with you right now?
All right. So I guess during this period, I have a 13-year-old son, and I began playing a few video games, and we got some SteelSeries equipment, which is kind of like the gaming, you know, keyboard, mouse, headset,
great stuff. Yeah.
The whole thing. And never in my life did I think I'd be so impressed by a keyboard alone. You can program every button on the keyboard to be different colors. You can have it do all types of different things. If you're running low on, you know, if you're playing Battlefront, I play Battlefront 2 a little bit. So it's a little bit of a Star Wars fan over here. If your life starts to draw down, your keyboard can dynamically interact with you and to tell you things like that. Colors can change. It can turn red, like crazy. I had no idea that.
That's cool.
Very cool stuff to check out. Yeah. So.
Yeah. When you joined us to talk to us, we were talking about old school gaming. I was talking about breaking out my old Super Nintendo Classic and playing some ancient games on that with my toddler, you know, to kickstart things. But man, like I don't game as much as I used to. Like I said, if I do, it's something old school and an old system I break out. But I am always amazed when I see some of the newest technologies, the newest games. I've always wanted to play Battlefront. That's a game I've never had a chance to play. And
you are the biggest Star Wars fan.
I was about to say. Yeah. But I don't have the time for video games like I used to. I have to draw the line somewhere.
So. You got a toddler. That's why.
Well, I told you, he makes a good excuse for me. He's a great reason to say, like, hey, I got to go play a game, honey. You know, Miles is asking for it, so I got to go.
It doesn't fly.
No, it doesn't. All right, well, Dean.
You have to stay relevant.
Yeah, well, you do.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to have to keep up with this stuff. Yeah. Dean, what's tech connecting with you right
all
now?
All right. So the app that I'm using right now is called SongShift. And I wish this was around a little while ago because I was a Spotify person for the longest time. And I had all my playlists going there and all that kind of cool stuff. And then Apple sucked me in and now I'm over on Apple's world, you know, and I've got, but there was no way for me to get all my old playlists over. And so for years I was like, yeah, whatever. And so anyway, I was out with a buddy, recently and he's like this master mind music guru. He's got great playlists. And I'm like, man, and he's in Spotify's world. So he sends me the playlist and I'm like, oh man. So I found SongShift. Now all his playlists are on my Apple world. And I'm whistling Dixie. I'm like, this is awesome. But what I still don't understand about companies like this, SongShift, how do these guys make money? It's a free app.
Is it advertising? Do they have ads?
No. There's a premium version, okay, but I mean, I think this is like a one-use toy or one-trick pony.
Right.
I transferred everything into my world over to Apple now. What do I need it for?
Does that work both ways? Like, could I give it somebody does. A playlist from Apple?
Oh, yes.
Nice. See, I was that guy who once upon a time made a. I still do technically, but I used to make a yearly playlist and burn it onto a CD. Well, first I put it on a cassette tape. First it was actual mixtapes. And then I started burning CDs and I would give them out like at Christmas time. I would give them out. People actually believe it or not, people were actually excited about this for a while. Like, not anymore as much. But now, like, you know, like, I mean, I've got a CD-ROM, I think, on this computer, but it's literally the only – I don't even have a place to play a CD outside of my car.
Right.
Like, CDs aren't a thing. So, like, I still make playlists in Apple's ecosphere. Mm-hmm. But then the only way you can share it is if someone else actually is using Apple Music, or you just give them the list of songs and tell them to go out and find it on their service. And it's just – it's not as simple as being able to hand someone a CD that they can pop into their car that night
and listen to my song. Song shift. There you go.
That is
awesome. See, you learn something new every day.
Solving a problem there.
What's up with you?
So for me, we were just talking earlier about movies. And I mentioned that I had just recently watched the – Stanley Kubrick 1957 film, Paths of Glory, classic war film with Kirk Douglas. Well, there's a lot of movies I always have on my list of stuff to watch. And when I get around to deciding, hey, I'm going to watch this certain movie, whether it's because a podcast has been talking about it and I want to keep up. Or
it was in your letterbox.
Or someone's recommended it to me. Well, if you haven't noticed, there's a lot of streaming services out there these days.
Oh, yeah.
And all of them have different collections and libraries of films, and it's hard to figure out everything. And granted, you can go out and Google stuff, but I found even Google isn't always very accurate with this sort of thing. Well, there is an app called Just Watch, all one word, Just Watch. And it is literally just an aggregate place to go and look up a movie. You can do TVs there as well, and it'll tell you exactly what apps it's available on, where it's free for streaming if you're subscribed, where you can pay for it, how much it currently costs.
Yeah.
They keep it very up to date. It's very rare that they're ever wrong. So last night, for instance, when I was like, hey, I'm going to watch Paths of Glory, and I remembered at some point seeing it was on, like, I think maybe Roku channel or something like that. And I've got a Roku, but it's only in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I went on that app, looked it up, and sure enough, it showed me Amazon Prime currently has the movie streaming. So I go to Amazon Prime. There it is. I can watch it.
Perfect.
It's a simple app. It's like I said, it's a kind of a one-trick pony. They have like a lot of stuff for like movie, you know, integration. And I think you can do reviews and see like information about films and stuff there. But that's strictly all I do is just go there, search for a film that I want to watch. It tells me exactly what apps I can find it on, how much I have to pay for it if I do. That shows me the cheapest place to buy it if I need to buy it or rent it.
Perfect. So thank you for the insight.
Highly recommended that.
Yes. There you go. There you go.
All right. Well, that does it for us. It's time for us to unplug. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate you talking to us about the topic again. If anybody has any thoughts, please reach out to us on Twitter or on our email. For Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. It's time for us to unplug. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Epson. Today's mobile consumers are demanding greater convenience, speedy checkout, and more personal service. Expand your POS capabilities to deliver new value-added services and faster transaction times with Epson OmniLink printers.
OmniLink printers are designed for next-generation retailer, enhanced customer service with mobile-friendly applications easily integrated into cloud or tablet POS systems. Epson eliminates connectivity and printing hassles on OS-agnostic printers with features like multi-device connectivity, wireless printing, and liner-free labels, all at ultra-fast print speeds and unmatched reliability.
To find the OmniLink printer that's right for your unique situation, contact your Blue Star Epson representative or visit the Epson microsite at bluestarinc.com.